It is Thursday, September 9th. We are 2 days away from Ohio State, Oregon, Iowa, Iowa State. Going to talk about them on this episode, along with some kind of general conversation about the national landscape. If you guys have been on YouTube, and if you haven't been on our YouTube, please go to our YouTube and hit subscribe, youtube.com/menace2sports, the number two. Really interesting how the first week played out across the landscape of college football. Talked a lot about it. Going to talk about it more on this episode. Also going to bring on our sportsbook joker, our handicapper, to talk about some sports gambling advice heading into the football weekend, college football. And he gives us a couple pro bets that he likes. So excited to have him back on and give you guys that insight. Only thing I want to talk about before we get the show started, our tailgate is ready to roll. Get your tickets now on Eventbrite or on my social media, on Braxton's social media, on Menace to Sports social media. Braxton Miller's Charging on Lane. Going to be big time. We got Buckeye Vodka, Screwball, Corona had to come on board. We got Corona Beer to sponsor, White Claw sponsored. We got wings from Shade on the Canal, which are bomb wings. We got awesome donuts because it's an early game. A shitload of good donuts. Hawaiian Club sliders. Which are little sandwiches on Hawaiian bread, Hawaiian buns or something. They're bomb. I had them last weekend. And then pretzel bites and something else. What am I forgetting? I don't know. Something. Oh, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. The menu's legit. All you can eat, $50. You also get drink tickets with that. And drink tickets are cheap if you're really trying to have a really good time and drink more than I would. They're $5 a piece. So also, just because you listen to the show, I'm going to give you a promo code, 20% off on that ticket or as many tickets you want to buy. No ducks is the promo. N-O-D-U-C-K-S. Bring a group of five or more. Shoot, four of them pay $50. You get your ticket free. So go get some friends. Get them to sign up. Come hang out with us Saturday, 10 o'clock until game ends. We'll be down at the Point on Lane and getting after it. Brax is going to be there. I know a number of current players' parents are going to come stop by before they head into the game. Some big names that you love as Buckeye fans. So make sure you come hang out with us, meet them, tell them how great their son is, and let's have a great time before the game. But enough about that. Enough, and we don't need a promo anymore. Let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
Episode 160 episodes. How crazy is that? I've talked to you for roughly 160 hours if you've been listening since day one. And I get messages all the time about the day one subs or listeners or viewers or whatever you want to call them. So I appreciate you guys. If you could do me a favor to help this thing grow, go on iTunes, go on Spotify, give us 5 stars, leave a little review, talk shit. I don't care. As long as you give us 5 stars, it helps us grow, helps bump the podcast up so other people can find it. So if you enjoy it, do me that favor. Pause it now and go do that. But anyways, enough about that. Let's talk about what's going on in college football. First of all, expansion talks on Friday. Tomorrow, there is going to be a vote by the Big 12 to add Cincinnati, BYU, UCF, and Houston. So making big, big moves, the Big 12 is, to try to sustain their conference, I guess, existence. I mean, SEC is getting Oklahoma, Texas. The Big 12 is adding those teams. And then just the pillars are going to keep falling. The one thing that I keep hearing, first of all, the Big 10 is not worried about athletics. They do. It's a part of the formula, but they don't care enough to supersede athletics over their academic and research desires, right? The Big Ten wants to be and wants to be regarded as an elite academic and research conference. That's what they want to be. That's why they would have never let Oklahoma in. They're not going to let Cincinnati in. Probably Ohio State's the reason they're not going to let Cincinnati in, because Ohio State does secretly and very tentatively run shit in the Big Ten. So they would never have allowed Cincinnati, even though I think that's what should have happened. Ohio State should have went out, got Cincinnati, got West Virginia, got Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame is the one that fits, right? It fits the academic prowess. It fits the athletics that the Big Ten should desire to have, right? The SEC, but with better academics. That's what the Big Ten wants to be, or should want to be. And so I think that's those were the Cincinnati and West Virginia maybe don't fit that mold that we're talking about. But I mean, that's Notre Dame certainly does. I think they need to be all hands on deck to try to get Notre Dame on board. It'll probably never happen. Last year was a perfect opportunity. But the one that I am hearing that could happen, right, as these chips start to fall, is USC to the Big Ten. And you got to think about it. The Pac-12, they make about $40 million a year in the Pac-12. They're the highest breadwinner in the Pac-12. If they were to jump to the Big Ten, a lot of analytic models, what the Yahoo Sports and those people, have projected that that money would jump to about $80 million a team. So you got to, or maybe that's, I think it was $70 million a team. Either way, that's something USC has to think about pretty hard, right? And then does that help draw Notre Dame in, right? The Notre Dame-USC rivalry, Notre Dame-Michigan. You could reinstate a Notre Dame-Ohio State kind of rivalry. You could get the Big Ten would immediately rival the SEC if you brought in Notre Dame-USC, especially in the long run. Maybe not immediately, but in the long run, what that would do for Southern Cal, what that would do for Notre Dame, it would change those programs and the Big Ten landscape. And you know me, that's my whole mantra. My whole goal in life is for the Midwest football to be the most powerful brand of football in the country. So that I'm hearing there is serious conversations about that. That it's not certainly not a done deal. It's not something they're doing, but it's there's serious conversation about USC and trying to attract them away from the Pac-12. Would be very bizarre if you go back to the Earl Bruce and Woody Hayes era to tell them. Do you imagine if you told Woody Hayes that USC was going to be in the Big Ten? He would probably punch you in your mouth. Unbelievable. My guy EA, man, linebacker, transfer from USC. The NCAA denied his transfer. Just today it was announced he's been denied transfer. Reason being, what I've heard is he went in the transfer portal before the exemption rule became a rule, became passed. So now he has to be governed by the rules when he went in the portal. So he had no reason to transfer. He has to sit out a year. Meanwhile, Jameson Williams, after the rules pass, can jump in the portal for no reason and start at Alabama and have a 96-yard touchdown, 94-yard touchdown against Miami. Just like that. You want to talk about incompetence at the NCAA? My God. I mean, that's what I've heard from really, really credible sources. And if that is really why he got denied, the NCAA is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you couldn't be any dumber. So I wanted to put that out there just to take a shot at the NCAA. Feel for EA. I mean, that's completely unfair. That maybe there's something that I don't know about, and I'm pretty connected at Ohio State. So that could be the case. But right now, that's what it seems like it is. So here's a question I have for you. I saw this thing on Sports Source Analytics, right, who I follow also. I use Pro Football Focus and Sports Source Analytics, kind of transitioning away from Pro Football Focus because they're almost like TMZ now, the way they operate social media-wise. But I saw a thing from the Sports Source Analytics that made me think. Our defense is back in college football. We've been talking about it for a long time. Offenses the last 5, 6, 10 years. Right, have been the in vogue way to win, right? That's how you win national championships. Just look at the teams. Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, Najee Harris last year, Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence. The teams that won national championships just had insane offenses. And if this is any indication, right, week one total points per game trends, right? Week one of college football in 2021, the total points was 52.3. That is 7 points less than last year. And it's the lowest total since 2009, right? I mean, the highest total was 2018, 60.1%, right? I think this is a real thing. I think defenses are coming back. Because here's what happens in football in general. Going back to 1900, football is a cyclical game. You see it all the time. You see it with Urban Meyer's offense, right? When he got to Florida, he was running single wing offense, stuff that was popular decades ago. He was doing it on spread sets, but that stuff hadn't been seen in forever. Reading DNs on some of these plays, guard tackle pulls, like some of these things were, they were novel concepts, right? Because defenses can structure themselves to shut down what offenses do. And as the offense evolves, the defense becomes behind, right? Over the next decade, defenses catch up and they get ahead, right? Then offenses have to evolve. That's the cycle of college football. It's been going on for over 100 years. And so I believe, we'll see how it plays out the next couple weeks. I believe defenses have finally caught up and the cycle might be turning back over. And this might be the year of the defense, right? You look at Georgia Clemson. What happened? They both played outstanding defense. Georgia had a pick six for a touchdown, and that's why they won. Defenses, the trend of defenses winning championships might be back. Can you imagine it? My next question is this. Why didn't the SEC look like the SEC in week one? Why did they look like such a dog shit conference outside of Alabama? Maybe A&M, maybe Auburn, but Alabama, right, was the one. Why? And I'm going to bring back, just for comedy's sake, a tried and true, right? An old school press conference that might have the answer. This is to all SEC teams, what you need to do and why I think you did not look like the SEC.
Trying to get our two boys ready to carry them to golf tournament before practice, right? 12 cats live across the road. Our door's open. Screen's broke. We need to get a new screen door, but the screen's broke. So you can come in through the screen, but you can't get back out of it. I turn and look, there's a little kitty cat in our kitchen. So I said, what are you doing in here, little kitty cat? By that time, the cat turns, tries to get back out. That screen won't go that way. Cat starts going, meow, all crazy. And I told our players, we need more dogs. Bo's barking in the back. I have to go shut Bo up. Mel's like, what's going on? I said, there's a cat in the house. Cat in the house? I said, yeah, there's a cat in the house. So I told our players, I tried to let it out the front door. Meow, meow. The cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here, meow, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
We found the answer from what, 7 years ago or something like that? David Bennett from Coastal Carolina knows the problem. He knew the problem about his team back then. That's the problem with the SEC. Too many cats. We need more dogs. That's what they need to do, right? Too many guys looking in the mirror, looking for wristbands. Or do you look pretty? Maybe that's the reason, right? But the SEC has a chance this weekend to avenge their reputation with a slate of games that is, I mean, going to be some heavyweight battles. Here are the opponents for the SEC. Alabama State, East Carolina, Pitt, South Florida, UAB, Colorado. Alabama's really going to have a tough test when they play Mercer. Like, how in the fuck does anyone in the world let Alabama play Mercer? Why does Mercer let Alabama play Mercer? They couldn't get, like, Mississippi State or someone? Alabama's playing Mercer. I don't even know what the fuck a Mercer is. Insane. NC State is probably, there's two possibilities as the best teams on this slate. NC State's one of them. Austin fucking Peay. That's a good one. McNeese. LSU might actually lose to McNeese, so that could be a heavyweight bout. Let's just see. And then Colorado State. Steve Adazio has to go travel or go play an SEC team. Travel and play an SEC team. Like, what kind of dog shit is this? To steal a line from Eli Apple's uncle, the comedian Michael Blackson, in next Friday. What kind of shit is this? I can't get jiggy with this shit. Like, what is that schedule? Who is supposed to get excited? And look at the rest of the country. I mean, the Big Ten has two good games. Only two games we're going to talk about this. Number four, Oklahoma, Western Carolina. Number six, Clemson, South Carolina State. Number eight, Notre Dame, Toledo. Cincinnati, Murray State. Texas, Arkansas. I guess that's a decent game. North Carolina, Georgia State. Miami, App State. Utah, BYU. USC, Stanford. After a Kansas State loss, that might as well be Murray State. Arizona State plays UNLV. That's our top 25 outside of Iowa, Iowa State, and Ohio State, Oregon. That's what we get. I feel like the NCAA needs to step in, which they won't, and create some like schedule guidelines. Like you can have your cupcake game week one. You get it week two. You get it week three. So we don't have a weekend where it's like, wow, football sucks this weekend outside of these two games. Like, what an awful fucking weekend. But enough about that. Let's talk about the first game of the week. We're going to end with Ohio State, Oregon, and then we're going to get to our gambling segment, our handy sports betting handy segment. Good Lord. Iowa State. After not playing last year due to COVID, Iowa State looks to avenge a one-point loss in 2019. And after watching both of their games, I think Iowa State is probably the better team, right? We all think that. We know that. But Iowa was very impressive. We're going to get to it in a minute with our handicapper, but the reality is this. We think Iowa's better than they were, right? Two pick sixes for touchdowns inflates that score, and it just makes Iowa look a lot better, right? Because here's what Iowa State has to do. They need to force Spencer Petras is their quarterback, right? I really like him. Excellent arm talent. He executed very well, was very impressed with a few of his throws, but he's not a complete player yet. Iowa State has to pressure him and has to make him throw the ball. If they let Iowa ground and pound it, I mean, they're probably going to lose the game. Spencer Petras was 0-for-2 on deep balls versus Indiana, 0-for-3 throwing to his left at his close side, 46% completion for 139 yards, 30% under pressure, right? He was very average. Now, he made a couple throws where I went, ooh, his arm's live, right? They were up 31-3 at half, so he didn't really have to throw it a ton in the second half, so the stats can be a little deceiving, right? They ran the ball, and snap after snap after snap, that line of scrimmage against Indiana was moving downhill. The back they had, Tyler Goodson, had almost 100 yards on 24 carries and a touchdown. He's a hard runner. Half of his yards were after contact. Shoot, he had one 50-yard run where he was damn near untouched. But they are a two tight end team that's going to pound the shit out of you, and they come off the ball. They come off the ball. What I didn't like that Iowa didn't do is they didn't take advantage of that run game and give their quarterback some play action passes. I mean, he had two completions on play action passes for 11 yards on little boot rollout bullshit. They need some hard play action. Open some of these receivers up. They don't have great receivers. They're going to have to do that to try to win this game. Now, Sam LaPorta, their tight end, is a grown-ass man. I mean, grown-ass man. So remember that name. Sam LaPorta will have a day. I can bet it. I bet a ton of money on that. Iowa wasn't impressive on third down. They're not a pass. That when it comes to passing situations, Iowa's not going to execute. And that's why I'm cautious to take Iowa in this game. Iowa was 4-for-12 on third down versus Indiana. Against Indiana, their defense wasn't very good. You watch that whole game, their defense wasn't great. Iowa couldn't convert on third down. Now, on the other side of it, Iowa State didn't tackle very well against Northern Iowa. 10 missed tackles against, you know, they had one kid that I thought was somewhat dynamic, and they just couldn't tackle him. So it'll be interesting to see what Iowa State does. They're much more multiple defense, much more athletic defense than Indiana. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Iowa State tries to defend this Iowa run game and how they force this quarterback to try to throw the ball. Because if they don't force him to throw the ball, they let him run the ball, Iowa's going to win this game. I think that's what it comes down to. Can Iowa State wholesale stop the run to force Iowa to throw it to beat them? If they can, and they do, they're going to win the game. Simple as that. If Iowa can still establish a run game and attack Iowa State with toughness and that Iowa grit that they seem to have, and they don't have it in Ames. Ames is more like basketball, right? I think Iowa can pull this one out. Iowa State's offense is absolutely dynamic on paper, right? Breece Hall is so dynamic. Not on paper. That's on film and in real life. In space, I watched the whole game on whatever. I watched it actually yesterday, so I didn't watch it live against Northern Iowa, it's Northern Iowa, but when he gets the ball in space, the first defender never, or rarely at worst, but hardly ever. I don't know if I ever saw the first defender make the tackle. He always makes the first guy miss. But they just couldn't get him going in the run game at all. And it's only going to be 100 times harder against Iowa's defense. It really is. Iowa's defense was very, very good against Indiana, obviously. Now, Iowa State was missing Jake Remsburg, the tackle that got hurt last December. I think he played like a handful of snaps. The guard, Jake Remsburg, bumped out to play the right tackle spot. And they couldn't get the run game going. They couldn't move Northern Iowa off the ball. That's problematic. If you can't get Breece Hall going, your best player, I don't know how you're going to beat this Iowa team. That's what they have to do. Do you want to talk about the keys to victory for Iowa State? They got to get Breece Hall going. They got to get him the ball, not only get the run game going, but they have to find a way to get him in space. They have to. Now, the quarterback, Brock Purdy, I love him. I love him. He's athletic. He'll be very problematic for Iowa compared to Michael Penix Jr. He's a scrambler. He runs. When he sees a crease, he takes off, keeps plays alive, keeps his eyes downfield. He's just a baller, right? He's just kind of a baller. He's not a great thrower. Honestly, Iowa's quarterback throws the ball better than him, but he's just a baller. He's athletic. He completed 81% of his passes against Northern Iowa, didn't make any mistakes, took off and ran for almost 60 yards, 6.4 yards per carry, hit 2 of 5 deep balls, was 60% under pressure, which is respectable, right? He played his nuts off. They just couldn't run the ball, and their defense didn't play great. Simple as that. Their defense didn't tackle. Xavier Hutchinson is their lead dog at receiver. He doesn't have dynamic speed. He has solid ball skills and burst. I mean, he'll cause some problems, I would imagine, for Iowa, but he's nothing special. I know that, like, Michael Penix Jr. threw 3 interceptions, but he had no help from his skill players. He had 2 horrible ones, right? 2 horrible interceptions. One of them he threw to his running back who was blocking for him on a scramble, and the guy that the running back was blocking picked it off. It was like, what the fuck are you doing? Why did you throw it there? And he did have 1 drop that kind of hit off his receiver's hands and ended up in an interception. But 2.5 yards per carry against Iowa's defense. Indiana could not run the ball. Iowa's defense is stout. Now, Iowa didn't tackle well, surprisingly. 10 missed tackles also. And that could be problematic because Indiana is not near as dynamic as Iowa State. So 10 missed tackles against Indiana is going to equate to like 19-20 against Iowa State. So they have to shore that up, have to. But I'm going to tell you what, they have a stud. And not just because of his 2 pick sixes. Riley Moss, the corner at Iowa, is a stud. Now, he wasn't on Ty Freifogel at all during the game, but he got targeted 7 times, let up 0 catches, was the highest graded defender on the team, 92%, had 2 pick sixes. You talk about game changer. Riley Moss, write it down. That's the one to watch right there. What does he do when he's covering Xavier Hutchinson? Can he shut him down, and can they take away the pass game from Brock Purdy? Can they make Iowa State run the ball? Because that right now is Iowa State's weakness, right? Iowa's zone coverage has some serious holes in it. And when I watch them play zone coverage, they aren't overly athletic. And that closing speed is what you need to play a solid zone defense, right? There is time to catch. When the quarterback's front hand comes off the ball, everyone's watching his front hand in zone coverage, right? When his front hand comes off, I mean, hardly ever does a quarterback do that in pump fake, right? The coaches tell him not to because if you don't have front hand pressure, the ball can come out. So when the front hand comes off the ball, those receivers need to break and close windows. That's the premise of zone coverage, right? And if what I see from Iowa is they're not very athletic, those windows don't close fast enough. That could be really, really problematic from Matt Campbell's offense and Iowa State and some of the skill they have. That's some serious holes in it. But they rely on their pass rush to keep them productive in the zone defense. The D-line stole the show against Indiana. I mean, they just put on, I mean, they only had 1 sack. So if you just chase stats, they only have 1 sack. But they had a shitload of QB pressures. Lucas Van Ness, Noah Shannon, and then my favorite. This dude just sounds like a badass from Iowa. Zach Van Valkenburg. Doesn't he sound like he belongs at Iowa as like a D-end? It's like they've had that guy, Zach Van Valkenburg, for the last 3 decades, right? Ever since Kirk Ferentz got there, there's been a Van Valkenburg on Iowa's defense. But they were lights out. I mean, they were twisting, beating the O-line, getting pressure, and it was really good to see. So this is going to be an interesting matchup because Iowa State needs to get the run game going. Iowa needs to find a way to limit Breece Hall, just like, I mean, shoot, Northern Iowa did it. Why can't Iowa? So I like Iowa in this game. I'm taking Iowa money line. I really think Iowa can pull this out. They need to grind it out. This is not a sure thing. I would not put this like I put last week's 5 or 6 games that I predicted, but I think Iowa can pull this game out. I really do. They shouldn't. They're not as athletic, but Iowa State has major problems on the offensive line. They can't get the run game going, and their defense didn't tackle well. Iowa needs to tackle better and establish a run game, and they need to utilize play action. If they do, I'm taking Iowa as the winner. But on to the game of the week, right? Our game of the week for sure, because we have a tailgate going. So I'm going to give you my thoughts on the game. It's not going to be as analytical as usual because I already broke down Ohio State for you in their first game, and obviously the analytics come as we get further in the season. But I want to just talk about what I saw from Oregon, right? And I think it all starts, right? A lot like Ohio State had, they had some quarterback struggles. Anthony Brown, their quarterback, I think he was a decent player, right? Completed 62% of his passes, 172 yards, didn't really make any mistakes at all. But he just didn't do much for me, right? He didn't throw the ball down the field much at all. He didn't even attempt a pass to his left outside the hash over 10 yards, 0 for 0, right? Most of his passes were under 10 yards. I mean, I think he attempted what, I think six, eight, nine. He attempted nine passes over 10 yards, nine, completed four of them. So obviously 44% over 10 yards is atrocious. It's terrible, right? If he fumbled the ball, he had turnover issues when he was carrying the ball. He just was really basic to me. I mean, and Oregon has relied on having a dynamic quarterback, right? Justin Herbert, Marcus Mariota. They don't have that right now. On top of that, Kayvon Thibodeau is out now, and there are talks of other injuries on defense. We'll talk about Ohio State in a minute, what I've heard. But, I mean, they have Micah Pittman, who's supposed to be a great receiver. It was three receptions on five targets against San Jose – or Fresno State. I'm sorry. Did I say San Jose earlier? Fresno State. Like, just – I don't see anything out of Oregon that makes me think that this will even be a close game. When you talk about Ohio State, we all know what needs to improve. C.J. Stroud needs to improve. The run game needs to be more consistent with Mayan Williams and Travion Henderson. What I'm most excited to see is from all – everything I've heard, which is from – the horse's mouth, let's put it that way, Cameron Brown is going to play. Seven Banks is about 80% likely that he's going to play, right? We'll see how he feels tomorrow and on game day. That'll be a game time decision. But if they get those two corners back and they can roll with those top four corners, Denzel Burke is going to be fine in a supplemental role when he's not the guy, right? He's not going to go out and cover Micah Pittman every single rep. He's going to be fine. And then you get the linebackers to be more consistent in Taraja Mitchell and Cody Simon, and the D-line is going to absolutely explode in this game. I mean, Oregon's offensive line didn't give up much pressure, but, I mean, there's nothing to write home about. Fresno State didn't challenge them much at all. So I think this is a game where we're going to learn a lot. I don't want to spend too much time analyzing it because, honestly, there's not a lot to analyze. Oregon doesn't have a quarterback right now. They got Micah Pittman, who I like, right? The offensive line is average as the day is long. I think Ohio State should manhandle this team. And we'll get to our handicapper's opinion in a minute because he knows numbers in Vegas and money. But this game should not even be close. I'm predicting an Ohio State win, and I'm going to go with 49, let's say 28. What is it, a 21-point win? That's about what I think it's going to be, 49-28. I think that Oregon will get a touchdown here or there. There might be a mistake on offense where the Oregon scores on defense. Something might happen, right? But I think you're going to see a much improved Ohio State team, especially getting Cameron Brown back, hopefully getting Seven Banks back. Josh Proctor's going to play. Kayvon Thibodeau is not going to play from what I've heard. This should not even be a contest. I think that this is one of the weaker Oregon teams that they've had in the last two or three years. And I think last year would have been a much bigger test for Ohio State. Even though Ohio State was better, they had Justin Fields, I think it would have been a bigger test. I think this Oregon team, from what I watched of the San Jose Fresno Valley State game, they struggled. They didn't look good. The quarterback didn't look good. I don't see how this is a game. So I don't want to spend forever talking about it. We're going to do more analytical stuff at the live show tomorrow. But I think this is going to be a great day for the Buckeyes to kind of roll out who they were supposed to be in week one. And I think that's going to happen. Ryan Day has turned the heat up in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, making sure Kerry Combs knew that Thursday was not acceptable. It was not a good performance, right? He is not to rotate guys the way they rotated guys. I think he said it straight with Tony Alford, who he wants in at running back. And Tony knows. Tony rolled out four running backs, four series. And after that, he said, all right, here we go. This is what we are and what we got, Master Teague. You're going to have a different role now. We might put a package in where you're a lead blocker. You might be a goal line short yardage back, but Mayan Williams is the guy until Travion Henderson takes the reins. I think zone six performance, Garrett Wilson is sick right now that he didn't grade a champion, and he shouldn't have graded a champion. So he can be sick about it all he wants. He's got to catch the ball, right? You got to run every route as if you're getting the ball. He didn't. And I know he's pissed about it. From what I heard, he had an unbelievable week of practice. I look for him to be the player of the game. I think Garrett Wilson goes absolutely off. Travion Henderson gives you one wow play again. Maybe two. Let's double it. Travion Henderson gives you two wow plays. Garrett Wilson, player of the game on offense. C.J. Stroud performs much better. The defense plays their best players and shows up and gives Ohio State fans hope that they can build something national contender quality over the next, you know, handful of weeks before that big Penn State matchup at the Horseshoe. That's what I think is going to happen. So that's my opinion. Like I said, more to come on tomorrow's pregame show, or tomorrow, Saturday's pregame show at the Point on Lane. Come check it out. What better way to get to the handicapping part of the show, right? Talk to our lead handicapper, the sportsbook joker, than to give you an offer from one of our partners to get some free money, use our handicapper's advice, win, and then start collecting and stacking stacks of money. Why not, right? So one message from one of our sponsors, then we'll get to JG, the sportsbook joker, here on Menace of Sports. You like easy money? Thanks to MyBookie and their lock of the season, if either team scores in the NFL season opener, you win. If you didn't know, a game hasn't ended 0-0 since World War II, so this is a sure bet. Head to mybookie.ag, select the lock of the season, and if any team scores between the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Bucks, you win. The best bet you can make is one that you can't lose. MyBookie is also playing host to several exclusive contests, including their $100,000 Super Contest. It only costs 10 bucks to enter. There's big money on the line this season, so don't wait to get in the game. Join now. Head to mybookie.ag today and use our promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, and instantly receive double your first deposit. That's double your funds to double your winnings. Again, that's promo code MENACE to receive double your first deposit and get started with MyBookie today. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, seeing as it is Thursday, the college football weekend is about to kick off. We had to bring back on our lead handicapper for Menace to Picks, the sportsbook joker, to give us some insight into the weekend. How should we be betting and what should we be doing? We're trying to win money here, and that's what he is all about. That's what our subscription model is all about, right? Winning money. So what's up, JG?
14-4 for week one, coach. Between me and you, I think put our minds together and some other handicappers that we have on the team. 14-4 opening weekend for week one, plus 102 units on college football. So thrilled for week two coming up. We also have the NFL starting, you know, Thursday night football is tonight as we record, and then the NFL week kicks off as well. So it's just awesome to see the fans in the stands. September 11th weekend, I think it's been 20 years or so since that happened. I think it's just going to be a great weekend of college football and get that tradition back.
It's going to be big time, and that was definitely a big time week one, and we started off with a bang. The handicapping for college football was outstanding. So like you said, 14-4, and just kind of before we get into college football, you brought it up. NFL, I know NFL is probably the hardest sport to bet because it's just the parity is just so, you know, pretty even across the board for the most part, right? And when it's not, Vegas is usually pretty spot on. Talk to me just generally, philosophically, about betting NFL. What is a good strategy to take?
You know, Lil Baby dropped a line on the new Kanye album of the best way to win is on the defense. And for me, that's NFL. Like, if you go in there and you're super aggressive trying to fire every game, you're not going to win. No, you have to pick and choose your spots and take a defensive approach. I think when you go into each Sunday, you pick a couple games that you like and you stick to those games. Because knowing that so many of those games are decided by a field goal or by one touchdown, that, to me, that's the best approach, is going at it in that mindset of, look, I have my games mapped out. I'm going to stick to my plan. If they hit, great. If not, I'm not going to blow my bankroll on Sunday, particularly having a huge Saturday like we plan to have on college football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's kick off some college football games. Give us your opinion. I want to start off with a bounce back game. Obviously, getting rolled by Alabama. App State is no joke, usually as a FC or whatever, they're FBS, but a non-Power 5 opponent. Talk to me about the Miami Hurricanes. I think the line is -9. What do you think about Miami? Is that something you play, throw into a parlay? You think Miami bounces back, or could App State kind of keep the upset train rolling?
Yeah, this game is interesting to me. I can't look too far into Miami getting crushed by Bama because, right. I mean, everybody gets crushed by Bama.
For sure.
You look at the Buckeyes lost by 4 touchdowns in the national championship game. It's not the same Bama team. But to go in and create this, you know, narrative on Miami's terrible just because they didn't play well in Atlanta against Bama, who always kills people week one. We had that. Bama's 10-1 over the last 11 years. Now covering in week one. So we were on Bama. Miami's got a great bounce back opportunity here. The spread is interesting because App State's a good football team, and they've proven that. You know, they have a nice basketball program as well. They play in the NCAA tournament. So overall, I think you have to respect the Mountaineers of App State. They are not a laughing stock team that you just put on your schedule. You know, we experienced that with Michigan several years ago. And then as it's been seen since then, they're a good football program. So all that being said, I think that Miami wins that game. That would be utterly embarrassing for Miami to turn around and lose again. I like them as a like minus 260, minus 270 money line parlay play with somebody. And for me, that's Michigan. Yeah. You know, I know you're probably going to ask me about Michigan, but those are two teams playing home night games against inferior competition in kind of must-win spots. I think that would be embarrassing for Harbaugh to lose that game, particularly after Washington looked poor. So, and I don't think either of them will find an easy time, but I look for both of those teams to get it done. So if you're looking for a little late evening action, parlaying on the money line, the Michigan Wolverines and the Miami Hurricanes, I think you can make yourself a little bit of money.
Well, there's no doubt. And, you know, one of the cool things about handicapping is it's not about, like, who you think is going to win. It's not about, you know, offenses and defenses. A lot of times it's about analytics. And what you just said, I mean, the win probability of Miami is 74.7%. The win probability for Michigan is about 68%. So those are pretty high win percentages. And then you look at where is all the money, right? 77% of the money is on Michigan to cover. 83% of the money is on Miami to cover. So if you want to get frisky and say both are going to cover, we would advise against it. But the money and analytics are saying both definitely should win. And so that should be...
And then looking at Michigan, you know, the Huskies, Washington Huskies are 1-8 in their last nine games as an underdog. That's against the spread. Michigan's 5-1 in their last six as a home favorite. So I'm actually inclined to think Michigan would cover in that game. I like Michigan. I don't think that's going to be a competitive contest for Washington coming off losing at home to an FCS school in Miami, whereas I think App State can put up a little bit of a fight against the Hurricanes. I don't like the Hurricanes necessarily to cover as much as I do with Michigan.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, switching gears, I think probably the second most impressive team of week one, in my opinion, just watching the film, which I know doesn't have a ton to do with gambling, but it definitely can have an influence, right, is the Texas Longhorns went out and got a win against the Raging Cajuns. They go to Arkansas, and this game's interesting to me because I think Sark has something going, right? The spread's at -7 for Texas. Vegas is kind of split. 71% of the cash is on Texas to cover -7. You know, it's -196 is what I see it right now on the money line. What do you think about this game? Is this a stay away game, or is this, I mean, if you look, Arkansas is putrid on offense, right? So you'd love to say the over because you know neither of them plays defense. Sark's running one offense, but Arkansas is so bad on offense that it's hard to say that they're going to score points, you know?
Yeah, Bijan Robinson for Texas, you know, he was a guy that Ohio State coveted greatly, and then he's going in, and now he's one of the top players in the nation for Texas. Sarkisian was just absolutely money with that Bama group. Now, I think a lot of coordinators could have been money with that talent that they've had over there with their offensive line and, you know, Mac Jones and so many guys. So Sarkisian was great. There was a ton of games last weekend that the home team was a one-touchdown dog, right? You know, you started with week zero with Illinois winning straight up, and then you had Florida State playing in that same spot with a one touchdown dog, a game that they could have won. So these points are intriguing. I'm staying away overall just because I don't know enough about either of these teams with new coaches yet. Not overly excited about investing my hard-earned money into, you know, what I see as a game that could go either way. I wouldn't be shocked by any result in this game. And the stats don't matter too much historically at this point with new coaches and everything. So this one's a tough one to pick for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's probably a stay away, but I just wanted to talk about it because of Texas coming off in a hot start. So the next one I want to talk about is the kind of was my team preseason that I said was going to be one of the most improved teams in the country, and they really didn't have a bad year last year, so that's kind of saying a lot. But the Rutgers Scarlet Knights travel to Syracuse, and they are a 1.5-point favorite. And this is one of those games I'm sure you're going to say it's a stay-away game because that's probably the intelligent play. And Vegas is, I mean, dead split on everything, right? On money line bets, it's 51% to 49%. On spread bets, it's 48% to 52%. So a lot of money on Rutgers to cover, but is this a stay away game? I mean, what do we know about this game? What do we know about Rutgers, and what's your, I guess, handicapping advice?
Every single one of us at Menace 2 Picks has been talking about making money on Rutgers this year.
No doubt.
You know, we had them last week. You know, our Midwest insider had them as like his best bet of the weekend. They went off and, you know, won by a ton. And this Q's game is just the line's somewhat fishy to me. I don't know whether Vegas is trying to trick you. I would be all over Rutgers in this game.
Yeah.
To me, Rutgers would almost be an infinity lock to win this game, but I don't really understand why they're not favored by more. Is that because Syracuse went in and beat OU?
Right. By 20 points, you know, it's not like they beat them convincingly. I mean, it's 29-9. Yeah,
I think what I heard about that, I didn't watch that game, but I think what I heard about that game is it was a little bit closer than the score. Like, it's just far as, you know, the way the game was working out, OU had some chances. But so I like Rutgers again. I don't know whether it's just the national perspective so far with Vegas doesn't believe in them. To me, they're better than Syracuse. And under Schiano, if you look up historically, he's been money in non-conference games at Rutgers.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Something to consider. I'm leaning Rutgers hard. I'd probably play it a little bit. Nothing crazy, but you know, I do think that they're a little bit of what I would call an infinity lock, which is you know, kind of a bigger play for us.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I know. I mean, it was I think 12-6 at halftime, Syracuse OU. So it wasn't a convincing win. I didn't watch it. I don't know a ton about Syracuse, but I do know Rutgers, and I know 82% of all money in Vegas right now is on Rutgers to cover. So if you're gonna play it, I'm with you. Like, play it at least Rutgers money line, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to get on to the two big games of the weekend, and they're both Big Ten games, which is kind of a theme now, especially this weekend. There's not great games, but the first one is Iowa State. After Iowa rolled Indiana, Iowa State struggled with Northern Iowa. I watched both games. I mean, I think Iowa is a really solid team. They have a great defense, really good up front. They have a badass corner, had two pick sixes against Michael Penix Jr. And this game kind of has me scratching my head, right? Iowa State's a 4.5-point favorite, right? 60% odds or 60% probability to win this game. Iowa State does. After struggling with Northern Iowa, Iowa rolls Indiana. I mean, talk to me about this game. How do you play it, and what do you take from it?
Oh, we were all over Iowa, right, to beat Indiana. Every single one of us in the Minutes Two Picks team, we loved Iowa. I was on national radio on ESPN Radio Pittsburgh, and I gave that away as my best bet of the weekend, along with Penn State. Two teams that we loved, and, you know, Iowa goes in, and maybe they're not quite as good as they looked in that first game. When you get two pick sixes, everything's going to look a lot better for
you.
Oh, no
doubt.
They're not going to be able to rely on that. I will take the points. I'm not gonna give points. You know, in a lot of spots with going, if I get a chance to take points with Iowa, what I'm trying to say is I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Iowa State has had trouble beating them historically. So, this is a matchup that I think Iowa's comfortable in. For both of these teams, it's not a do or die game, you know, because I don't think Iowa's a national championship caliber team, but they're definitely a contender in the Big Ten West. This is a game for pride and, you know, recruiting and a lot of different things, but it's not going to be the end of these team seasons if they lose. So at the same time, I like Iowa plus four and a half. You want to buy it up to a nice number at six to make that, usually put it at like -140, -135, something like that. You could do that, or you could play Iowa on the money line, but I like Iowa in the game.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Well, I know this 97%, so I throw the stats at you. 97, this is one of the two highest totals I've seen when you look at the analytics of where cash is flowing. 97% of cash tickets are on Iowa to cover, right? What you just said, the plus four and a half, even if you want to buy it up. And then, believe it or not, I mean, the over-under set at 46, 95% of money's on the over. And so, you know me, this is not a Menace to Picks kind of way to do things, but I sit and look at those analytics, and I say, you know what, I might take a 6-point teaser on Iowa in the over, get the over down, get that spread to a nice 10.5, and you got to think that's going to hit, right?
Right. I like looking at the money before games, but when you get late money coming in with some of the big sharks,
yeah.
And it can get fishy too, because you see all the money on one side, but the line's not moving at all.
Right.
You know, like you've seen where 90% of the money's on a certain team to win, but the line is staying the same. You're like, something's not right.
Yep.
You know, so, but just looking at the teams, you know, analytics aside, I think Iowa is a really good football team. And for anybody to beat Iowa by more than a touchdown or so, that team's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, you got to be. And I think the biggest thorn in their heel is their offense, and that just is what it is. They control the clock. They run the ball. They don't really have – I mean, I really like their quarterback. I mean, he throws the ball well. They just don't have great skill, and I think that's the difference between Iowa State and Iowa, so I would tend to agree. Now to the game of the week, obviously, as Buckeyes ourselves – the Oregon-Ohio State game. Ohio State opens a minus 14, right? 14-point favorite. And the over-under something at 63.5 around there. What? How do you see playing the Ohio State-Oregon game?
Well, what's funny about Menace 2 Picks, and I think Menace 2 Sports, and obviously you're a former Ohio State coach. You love the Buckeyes. You know, we love the Buckeyes. But at the same time, people could say that we're homers. We try not to do that. We try to give you an honest depiction. And I think you do a great job of this on your show. You'll call coaches out. You'll call players out that aren't performing at the level that they should be performing at. Well, you're not going to get that in a lot of Buckeye media. You know, a lot of it is a love fest constantly. So we try not to do that. But with this, I just don't see any way that Oregon has any chance of winning this game at all. No. Oregon is 1-7 in their last 8 as underdogs. That's against the spread. Ohio State is 12-2-1 in their last 15 games against the spread versus the Pac-12. Repeat that, 12-2-1 against the spread playing a Pac-12 team. The Ducks struggled a little bit with Fresno State, who I think is a decent little team. They were up early, and they ended up actually they're losing in the fourth quarter of that game. The Buckeyes go in and play a pretty good Minnesota team and eventually cover the spread in that game. To me, this is a line error blowout. I've thought all summer that this is not a good matchup for Oregon, and this is the first time the Buckeyes are playing in the shoe. They weren't great at home against the spread last season, but it doesn't. That to me, that doesn't mean anything. You know, this is going to be a completely different atmosphere with a noon kickoff, 9 a.m. on the Pacific Coast. This, I think, Ohio State is going to kill Oregon personally. So this is an infinity lock for me. I think you can take them in the first half to be up by more than 7 points. I think they're going to win by more than 2 touchdowns. I could see this. My prediction for this game is like 49-21-ish.
49-21. So a 28-point win. So that is definitely a minus 14 winner if that happens. So we're taking Ohio State minus 14. What about the over-under?
Where are you at with that game? I mean, are you seeing the same thing as me? I know they have some good – I like their linebackers, but – other than that, I don't really like a lot of Oregon's team personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to come down to quarterback play. I mean, both of them have just subpar performances by their quarterbacks so far, and we'll see Jay Stroud take that next step. I mean, he's at home, right? He's had a week to learn from the things he did wrong against Minnesota, and then it comes down to things that I can't predict or control, right? If we're just talking about the talent and ability of a football player or team, I feel like I have a decent shot at telling you what probably should happen, right? But what I don't have any ability to predict is, are we going to rotate 4 running backs the first half? Are we going to rotate 3rd-string corners in the game? Like, I would imagine those things get fixed, and I know that Ryan has kind of demanded that they do after the Minnesota game. So assuming those things happen, I'm with you. I mean, I think this is a 20-point win. I don't know if I'll go 28, but 20-point win. I still need to see the defense show up, I guess, and play at a really high level. But I think it's really a game that if things improve from week 1 to week 2, as they should, if Carey can kind of stick to the guys that can play. I know I already talked about it on this episode. Cameron Brown is going to play. Seven Banks looks like it's about 75% chance to play. So they get 2 corners back, right? Josh Proctor's injury wasn't as bad as people were worried about. He's going to play. CJ Stroud is healthy. I mean, I think they're going to be the healthiest they've been. They got their corners back. You know, it's going to be a much different defense, I hope, than we saw on Thursday, because you're going to get those guys back. You're not going to see Legend playing corner and missing tackles and giving up touchdowns. Like, that's not going to happen. They're going to play their 4 corners. They're going to play, you know, play with Ronnie Hickman. They're going to play with Josh Proctor. I would imagine Cody Simon and Taraja Mitchell are more staples in the inside at linebacker. And if all that happens, I don't see how this isn't a 20-point plus win for the Buckeyes.
I think that Vegas, you know, I've talked about this on ESPN Radio, is minus 17 is a very common line for Bama, even against really good teams, even against top 10 teams, they'll be a 17-point favorite. That's kind of Ohio State's status currently. Oregon is a top 15 team, and they're a 2-touchdown underdog. Vegas, to me, wants you to look at that and be like, okay, this is the Oregon Ducks we're talking about here, the world-famous Oregon Ducks, and you're giving me two touchdowns. And for a sharp bettor that knows a lot about these teams, it's like, yeah, we are giving you two touchdowns.
Right.
Because I mean, it's probably a three-touchdown game.
Well, yeah, and they're trying to entice you to bet take Oregon plus 14 because that sounds really good, right? Oregon is supposedly a really good team. I mean, you look at some analytics, like they have Ohio State is the second, you know, the power rankings or FPI, all the different ones. Ohio State's around two in all of them, right? Or is it two in all of them? And then you look at Oregon, it's 13. That should equate to a closer game than a 14-point win, right? 2 and 13, usually. You'd think that's maybe a 9-point win or a 7-point win, but no. I mean, Vegas has set it at 14. I know that Pro Football Focus, for what they're worth, they have Oregon as the way they do it is they say, all right, Oregon is approximately 9.7 points better than an average team on a neutral field, right? And Ohio State is a 21 points better than an average team on a neutral field. So that right there is already an 11-point differential. So Vegas obviously thinks even more of Ohio State than that, right? To bump it to 14.
Right. Yeah, I think just good luck to teams once you get down. If you're playing at the Shoe this year and you get down and you have to throw the ball against Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison and Haskell Garrett and some of these guys, just that's not going to be a good look for you. And that's when the game's going to go from, okay, it's a 10-point game, pick six, sack fumble, just like we saw against Minnesota.
Yeah.
So that's where the difference is going to be made. The Buckeyes are going to score on defense, I think, and it's going to end up being an obvious cover.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Well, that's where my money would go if I bet. But so that is the college football landscape that I wanted to cover. Give me just throw out anything you think about NFL bets this weekend. Anything you like, maybe, you know, tonight, Thursday night, or even this weekend. Anything you see that you think is a good play that people could get in on.
You know, I dropped a little baby line when I first got on the show today. Like, you have to be defensive, particularly going into this week one. NFL is the hardest thing on the board to beat. And that's what's funny is it takes more money than any other sport. And it's a giant sports book advantage. So find your spots that you like. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 38-19-2 in the 59 games that Mike Tomlin's played as an underdog. So much like your staff with Urban, you guys were money straight up. You would win straight up as underdogs. The Steelers cover at 66% rate when they're a dog, and they're playing against the Bills. Now, the Steelers have some, you know, off-the-field stuff going on with T.J. Watt's contract. They lost Bud Dupree. So there's some things to worry about, but they still have Ben Roethlisberger, and they still have an abundance of talent. In their front seven, they've had more sacks than any other team in the NFL over the last 5 years. They have talent at receiver, and they have a good offensive line. So I think the Steelers can cover. I would buy that up to like 7. If it's 6.5, get the Steelers with 7 points against Josh Allen. I think the Bills are really good, but this is a huge game for Pittsburgh, and they play well in big games. And as you see, they have a great cover percentage in these spots. Also, their prop. I think their running back, Najee Harris, right, Coach?
Oh, yeah.
Najee Harris is going to be a factor. And to me, his prop of whatever it is, I like his over in rushing yards or total yards for this game. I think he's going to be a factor in the game, and he's going to be a great player for Pittsburgh. I mean, as soon as I saw that he was playing for them, I'm thinking, all right.
Oh, what a fit, right?
You know, he's perfect for them. I know Browns fans aren't going to want to hear this, but I don't think there's any way the Browns can win this weekend against the Chiefs. We talked about it, and you mentioned if they're able to run the ball and control the clock and then make some plays in the fourth quarter. But Patrick Mahomes is different. He's lost 9 games in his career. He's only lost 4 home games in his career. And they'll be ready to get that taste out of their mouth from losing, I want to say, 30-9 in the Super Bowl and getting absolutely embarrassed. They made some moves in their offensive line. They made some moves on their defense. The Browns are a really good football team. Don't get me wrong. And Cleveland fans, don't get down if they don't win week one, because they have a ton of winnable games on their schedule. They're going to turn around. Even if they lose that game, they'll turn around and they'll be 2-1 really quick. And so I do love the Chiefs, whether I'm taking them to cover the spread, because Mahomes wins a ton by double digits, particularly at home. Go look that up. And again, so that shows a little bit of our non-bias, you know, here. A lot of Browns fans around our community, but you know, we're willing to take a stand against our teams if the numbers point to that.
For sure, for sure. Well, I think that's a There you go. That's all the insight you need to attack this weekend from a sports gambling perspective. And as always, make sure you check out Menace to Picks at Menace to Picks on Twitter and Instagram. And check out patreon.com/Menace to Picks to get all the breakdowns daily, weekly, you name it. 14-4 last weekend, slayed college football, looking to do it again. So, JG, the sports book joker, thank you for coming on, my friend.
Appreciate it, sir. Have a good one.
All right. We'll see you next week. That's what I got for you. Some handicapping advice, a little Iowa-Iowa State analytical breakdown, Ohio State-Oregon general thoughts. More to come on that tomorrow in the pregame, or I keep saying tomorrow, Saturday in a pregame show. Come check it out. Come hang out with us. I gave you a promo code, no ducks, not bucks, not go, no ducks for 20% off. Grab four friends. They buy tickets full price. You get yours for free. Fifth one's free. Right, go on Eventbrite or any social media, get the link, come hang out with us. Great food, great drinks, some big-time Buckeyes walking around. Watch Ohio State get a convincing win in a beautiful 77-degree day in Columbus, Ohio, down on campus. The best tailgate atmosphere in the country. Come hang out with us. Hope you enjoyed the show. What do we got, an hour? About an hour. A little short of an hour. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you're entertained. Hope you got something out of it. Really excited to break down this game because I think this one's going to give us a lot of stuff to talk about. So hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.